think cabin fever has set in for me yet. But then again, I am used to being alone, cooped up in small places with thousands and thousands of blinking lights, and whirring fans and spinning discs and all that. So this is kind of right in my wheelhouse. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey. Our phone number is 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Joining me today, as usual, trapped in the house, I was going to say bunker, but that has references I don't think I'm going to do, is Becky. How are you, Becky?
I am okay. Not so much cabin fever, but I know something's gone a little bit bonkers with me because I have actually in the past 4 days gone out twice for a run.
For a run?
For a run.
Not a jog.
I actually did a jog. Well, yeah, for a jog. Okay. Let's be honest here. I am not a runner. This is not like, you know, a sprinter's pace, not even marathon pace. I think that I could run a 15-minute mile.
Okay.
And many people will power walk a 14-minute mile. So, but I know that there must be something really, really crazy with me if I am going out for runs.
Well, yeah, I'm used to working around equipment and stuff and being mostly alone, where you're used to being in front of hundreds or perhaps thousands of children's every day, thinking of the children's. So this is quite a change for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'm used to being on my feet most of the day, and for 2 weeks not being on my feet and kind of eating out of boredom and not being able to visit the community center to go to the pool. I'm just going to pretend that I'm swimming through the air, and for some reason my lungs are burning and my knees really hurt.
Why am I thinking of Rocky? And joining us by remote is Jonathan Arioli. He's the podcaster at TDTF Pod, a sometimes small business owner, a parent to young children, and a longtime friend of the show. Welcome, Jonathan. How you doing?
I am doing okay and healthy.
That's good to hear. So how are things by you?
They're all right. They've got the school is closed, which for me personally is the largest infectious vector. The hotels aren't really serving anyone. The restaurants are doing curbside only. And basically, the service industry is more or less shut down.
Right.
And we should say that while we are up here in the northwest corner of the country in Washington, you are in the southwest and Rockies area. You're in the state of Utah, right?
Yeah, Mormon country. Yeah.
I remember those days.
Oh, it's. I wish I didn't.
Ouch. Well, so we've been keeping busy, and for me, it's important for me to keep busy at times like these. So I've spent a lot of time working on the station. I recently rewired it so that if I want, I'm still playing with it because the noise floor is pretty high. But I'm working on KTQA. It's generally considered good practice for LPFMs to broadcast in mono. Because it's not as, you know, because you're not as wideband, so you get better range. But I'm in an urban area where there's a bunch of stations on the same frequency around me, so I've been experimenting with broadcasting in stereo and generating my own baseband with like the radio text stuff, so that like on newer radios where it shows the text and stuff like that, it shows something. And for the last 24 hours, the station has been saying Sam says hi. And that's been what I've been up to when I'm not in front of a microphone. But Becky, we've been doing something in front of a microphone, have we not?
Yes, we have. We have been doing KTQA daily briefings. That's our local radio station here that Sam's been talking about being that engineer for. And we're lucky, I guess, that he's been able to work his tail off to be able to broadcast remotely from our home, where we are staying home and staying healthy. And that's been a pretty cool endeavor because, well, during the weekdays, we've been able to speak with someone from the community. So we do our daily briefing at the top of the hour, or, you know, right at the beginning, where we read through those announcements for our area that have to do with closures and resources and things like that with COVID-19. And then featuring that interview with the community member really helps keep listeners, well, we hope, keeps them connected to the community, you know, a reminder that, hey, just because everyone's inside right now and at home doesn't mean that there's not this cool stuff about our city. And when this lifts and it's safe to gather in groups, these are the kinds of things that you can remember, or these are some of the new ways that you can interact with people. So hopefully it's to raise spirits a little bit.
And if people are curious and want to check out what we're up to, where would they go?
We've been faithfully documenting all of those and archiving them at daily.ktqa.org. So there's a few episodes up so far. This weekend is just the announcements, but during the weekday we go to those interviews. So it's been fun, and it's been fun, I guess, tracking down people to say, hey, you know, I think you might have something cool to say. And people say, me? Oh, okay. Yeah, because, you know, when people are stuck at home listening, you know, and sometimes radio listeners, they might not be able to avail themselves of a lot of online tools. And that's why they're listening to terrestrial radio.
Absolutely. So, I think we're going to be having probably one or two announcements like this every episode for the next few weeks. American Atheists is postponing their 2020 National Convention, which was scheduled to have taken place during Easter weekend in Phoenix, Arizona, in order to align with recommendations by national, state, and local health agencies during the COVID-19 pandemic. The organization plans to host their 2021 National Convention in Phoenix and is transferring registrations to next year or offering refunds for registrants who wish to cancel. So, I was actually kind of thinking of going to that one because it's in Phoenix and I have a lot of connections there. And you know, it would be reasonably economically expedient for me to go to that one.
Not this year.
Not this year. So perhaps next year. Like I said, this is probably a lot of this that we're going to be talking about. Anything anything happen to you with Jonathan that you kind of have to postpone to next year or just keep an eye on?
Oh, if only I had anything planned in which to cancel. So mostly I've been stuck at home with the kind of job that I have. It's a swing shift thing. And if any of you people out there that worked in the service industry knows about swing shift or any of the other kind of industrial stuff, you understand my pain.
Yeah.
Between going with a graveyard and then the morning and then the evening shift. It's basically home and back again. That's about it, but with less elves.
Yeah, no, I worked a swing shift in operations for a couple years, and no, I would not. As much as I enjoyed doing operations, that was the worst shift to do it in. I wouldn't do it again if you paid me.
Yeah, that would be a nice option to have. But being in the rural part of Utah, things are a little slim pickings. But I am happy that I do have a job that hasn't decided to cancel on me. So it's been a good thing.
Yeah, that's been something we've been hearing from our friends, the show friends here in Tacoma. A lot of them who work in service jobs have been already laid off. And I mean, we've all seen the news on that, right?
We totally have. And I'm grateful that our educators, for the most part, are continuing to be paid. But it also means that we're continuing to work.
Right.
So that's an interesting balance that I'm finding.
And I'm a bum. So we have an email. This is Daniel from Tacoma, who writes, thoughts if there would be any religious resurgence post-pandemic or an exodus. There's a joke in there somewhere. Also, why do some people feel that doctors and science can be so wrong that they lick the doorknobs? Jonathan?
Well, I can't see into the future, and predestination isn't a thing. So I wouldn't know if there's going to be an mass exodus or an upsurgence, although there is the increase in nuns that are out there, so maybe things might lean in that direction. As far as the doorknob licking thing, look, people are not bright in general. If you look at our 2016 election, for example, it's one of those things that it just can't fix a certain level of dumb.
Well, that puts my whole education career and identity into question. You're making me question my entire existence here, Jonathan. I think post-pandemic, maybe I'll have to turn to religion.
Well, you've got them young. You've got plenty of time to, you know, kind of hammer out the corners and maybe beat that out of them. So I have hope that you'll be a lot more effective, so that maybe there'll be fewer doorknob stickers.
Ask an Atheist neither condones nor encourages nor
well,
does any of that for beating or hammering on children.
I've just, what, why? I wasn't expecting that. Okay.
There you go.
I don't know why I hear doorknob licking and suddenly I'm thinking of electronic music. I'm not really sure where that is.
Is there
I don't know.
Confluence in there.
I got to think about it.
That's a weird type of synesthesia, Sam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. So last night, late at night trying to fall asleep, I think everybody, I think I've gone on enough about my sleeping woes or whatnot. And, last night I was wide awake watching, trying to find soothing, YouTube videos that would give me something to think about. The life cycle of the rust spotted cat, which is the smallest wild cat that there is, or something like that. And then it pops in because it's YouTube. Suddenly live statistics about the Corona-19 pandemic, and currently it's at 666,000 cases worldwide, rah, 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 and then like, oh, not this, and then move on, and then it's, somebody plays Mylan's Secret Castle, which is a favorite video game of mine for a while, and then it's Patriot! Viral! Rah! Oh my god! The bankers are responsible for this! The bankers! And there's always that little pause before they say bankers because they don't want to say what comes before the word bankers, but you know, right? You know, it's one of those.
The little anti-Semitic flavored pause before
they say
bankers.
it's. Oh, God. And so just finding things on YouTube was just terrible. And then so I felt like, well, okay, maybe I'll just watch regular TV. That was a mistake. So I just thought, you know what? Okay, I'm gonna watch Stargate SG-1, a TV show where people in the Air Force destroy gods. That's kind of my deal. and then so I watched that, and then I had this kind of crisis, like intellectual, emotional crisis, where like, what if this leads to a world war?
In what way would you think that? Pandemic? Would it be over resources? Would it be a
Well, that's the thing. It's like, why did I think of that? What brought, like, it just came out of nowhere and just sort of attacked me emotionally. And I'm like, wonder why did I think of that? And this is one way deal with emotions like this, is I try to figure out, where did it come from? Why did I think of that? And I think it just occurred as I was thinking about it and as I was trying to process it. It's like, yeah, people are scared. Scared people act out sometimes. I'm certainly not immune to that. And then I just realized, wait, the last time we were talking about a pandemic, it was 1918. It was during World War I. So I was probably just conflating pandemic and World War in my head. And that made me, a little bit more comfortable. And, as I kind of figured that out, at some point I fell asleep and it was fine.
I think that's reflective of a lot of the anxieties that kind of are coming up and bubbling to the surface for a lot of people. And as far as whether I think there will be a religious resurgence after this, I mean, public religion has taken such a different kind of turn, even in the last 2 weeks, with people streaming their services over the internet. I mean, we always have had, you know, being able to tune in to this Sunday's church service, you know, through Facebook Live or whatnot. But now that's everyone. And maybe, you know, I can see it going two ways. Maybe after this has lifted, the drive to just be in a communal space with people will be so strong that it'll be so wonderful that it'll bring a lot more people back to churches. The other way I could see it going is, I guess I'd rather, you know, go to the sports stadium to be with lots of people communally or just be in a park with lots of people. And maybe all that streaming services, you know, of my church service or my Sunday morning, you know, whatever, Bible reading. Yeah, I don't know. Taught me that I could do without it.
I mean, I'm still watching the news here and there, just not when I'm trying to sleep. Jonathan, have you seen the new ad by Franklin Graham?
I can honestly say I haven't.
You are lucky. Have you seen, have you caught any ads or anything like that? Or any, have you seen much, I mean, you're in Mormon country. Have you seen much in the way of increased religious fervor yet?
The most I've seen is there's been a serious increase in the number of religious ads, which I skipped. So
right.
I haven't given them much of the time of day. There is that one that's the Alone Together thing, which I'm not sure if that's a national program, advertisement, public service thing, or if that's basically in Utah.
I have not
Other
seen
than
it.
That, no.
So, yeah. No, I caught an ad with Franklin Graham, a man who I am happy to say I flipped off his, I gave his bus the double deuce once as it passed in front of the Swiss. I'm not going to say it's one of my top five favorite moments, but it's one of my top five favorite moments. yeah, but he's like, in this type of crisis, you must, it's the standard, they're like...
How much money was he hoping to get from you?
Well, it was, he's not going to say, he at least understands how the con works. He knows how to fleece his mark. He talks about Jesus and fear and trying times and says the word end times a couple of times. And then gives you a phone number, a prayer line, and I was tempted, I admit I was tempted to call it, but I don't want to scare people right now, it's not in me. it's ticks on a dog. Anytime anything happens, guys like this come out of the woodwork, and their answers, they're full of hope, full of false hope, I can do things for you through the power of God, and it's just political power games. They just want more control over people, and that's why he's spending all this money to talk to you on CNN to prey on your fears, praying with prayer. And it made me, I don't know if you noticed, made me a little angry. So
just a bit,
just a little. I'm an anti-fan of Franklin Graham. I've moved on from that guy in Colorado, and now I'm angry at Franklin Graham.
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt?
Yeah, I can't even remember his name now, even though I used to scream it out loud.
Mr. Bojangles.
Mr. Bojangles, yes. Paul from Ashford writes, I see many folks wearing gloves to protect themselves. COVID-19 gets into you via mucous membranes. You touch an infected item, then touch your eyes, nose, mouth, with or without these gloves. You've introduced the virus to yourself. Like writing the combination down on a locked combo lock, it's just false security. So full disclosure, this is Paul from Ashford. Ashford should stick out as much in the way Hunter S. Thompson would go to Vegas and do what Hunter S. Thompson does. I'd go to Ashford and do what I do, which is a lot less notable.
That's the mountain.
Yeah, it's the mountain. Paul's a very, very good friend of mine. So,
and we should say that Paul is a 20-year veteran of the public health systems as well, working in nursing and as an EMT, an EMT instructor, and all sorts of stuff like that. So I'm really grateful for this comment. Now, I am a person that... In the three times in the last, 16 days that we've gone out, I have worn gloves and just nitrile gloves. And what I do is I'm popping into the grocery store. I go with my car. I wear the gloves as soon as I exit the car. And I touch only the things that I'm purchasing and, you know, all that kind of stuff and the keypad. And then I put the groceries in the car. Yes, wearing my gloves. And then before I get in the car and, you know, touch the steering wheel again, I just remove those nitrile gloves again and then put my sanitizer on my hands. And then when I came back to the house, you know, I have right there at the door entry a spray bottle with a bleach, you know, antiseptic solution and spraying down all the plastic packaging and things like that. And then washing my hands again. So I think Paul brings up a really good point about this, that just because you're wearing gloves, I mean, I would hate to see people wearing those gloves thinking that they're protecting themselves and brushing their hair out of their eyes and itching their noses and things like that in the hopes that they're not going to be introducing any kinds of microbes into their systems that way.
Jonathan?
Well, it kind of reminds me of wearing masks. Because one of the main points of wearing a mask in the first place, aside from dealing with the small aerosolized molecules from moisture in your lungs and breathing something like that in, is specifically for you not to touch your face. But you'll see people who are wearing a mask, take them off, eat something, scratch their nose, rub their eyes, and then put the mask back on as though that managed to do anything as far as personal protection is concerned.
Yeah, I agreed.
There was a really great, funny kind of ironically funny moment. In the few days before our schools closed, I was helping out in a ninth grade biology classroom, and there was a child, and he was wearing a mask, just a regular one that you might get as, you know, one of the disposable ones, not a real, like, N95 one or anything like that. But he was in the biology lab, he was wearing his mask, and he's like, oh, this is to protect me from coronavirus, while he was eating hot Cheetos. And so he was licking his fingers, sticking them into the bag, putting the Cheetos under his mask into his mouth. And I said, okay, kiddo, one, that's not going to help protect you against coronavirus when you're licking everything. Two, please go wash your hands. Three, no eating in a biology lab. Like, oh my goodness.
It tastes so good.
So, I mean, he may not be a doorknob licker, but he is a hot Cheetos finger smacker. So, I mean, part of it just may be that sense of invincibility and specialness that particularly seems to plague the adolescent mind, and then sometimes in certain circumstances persists in us humans into later adulthood. So I don't know. And I think that a lot of those things are to help protect us emotionally with all of those anxieties that we might get as well.
I don't know if
it's one of those weird protective things, that exceptionalism that, oh, it wouldn't happen to me. Oh, I've got a great immune system. Well, of course, that's not the main concern. Sure, someone of that age has a decent immune system, being a young, healthy adult. But it's the older people, like going home to their parents who has asthma, or their grandpa or their grandmother or an old uncle. It acts as this unfortunate counterbalance to good intention.
Yeah, I used to pride myself on my immune system. Then I lived with a teacher and
realized that she was basically
anymore. It's
a,
like
a germ factory carrier.
Yeah, it's living in a disease lab.
Typhoid Becky.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, when I wear gloves, I generally don't wear gloves when I'm outside. Usually when I'm wearing gloves, it's for like if I'm, you know, handling things that maybe shouldn't be on my skin or I shouldn't eat, you know, like if I'm like working with etchant or muriatic acid or I'm doing electrolysis, I'll wear gloves then, because if that stuff gets on you, it's kind of itchy and horrible or it stains or whatnot. And at that point, I think I'm wearing gloves more for the mental reminder that I'm dealing with substances maybe I shouldn't ought to. Yeah, and I shouldn't maybe be touching my faces and my face, or what are my faces? What am I talking about?
The many faces of Sam.
Please no. So this is a mental bookmark, and I know this is kind of the opposite of what Paul is saying. Is maybe if I wore gloves, it would be a reminder to myself not to touch my face, because that's a problem. I don't know. I need to think about it. But the fact of the matter is, in an aerosolized, in a virus like this one, gloves are of very limited use and do provide a false sense of security. And I think that's important to state. So thank you very much, Paul. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We go to the break, and we come back. We're going to talk about hot dogs. Again.
Hello and greetings.
I'm on the radio.
Oh, beware the squid ink.
When you see them sell squid ink, you will always see them wink. Because of that, you must stink. Be aware of the squid ink. Not sponsored.
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. Cephalopod is not real.
Ah, no.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Yeah, we're playing the commercials again. Not for any big reason, but merely because they make me happy and I like them. That's it. That no special occasion. Nothing to announce. I just really liked doing those commercials, and I'm proud of them, so I'm playing them.
And we all need a little bit of a bit of humor and fun here and there. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably one of my favorite things I've done with camp, and it was just something we came up with on the fly because we needed to fill a unit, And it was, I told them, all right, so the theme of this was two years ago, and the theme of the camp was flying spaghetti Western. And they had somebody who was selling squid ink. And I'm just like, hey, let's just do a commercial. And I'm going to air them on the show. And I'm not going to tell anybody what it's about. I'm just going to pretend that they're regular commercials. Because at the time, we were transitioning from commercial radio and podcasting to community radio. And you know, it's just going to be a thing. And that's how we're going to do it. And then, and I had so much fun with those. And they're all online. If you want to listen to them all, you can go to imnotsquidding.com. And they're all there. You're a regular listener of the show, Jonathan. What was, I mean, did you notice when we started playing those commercials just out of offhand?
It's really hard not to. The first time I remember hearing one of those commercials, I just got really quiet because I have a habit of talking to myself during commercial breaks and usually making fun of them. It's just a hobby of mine.
Oh, sure.
But as soon as that came on, it just stopped me full force. And it's a joy to see kids getting their creative their urges out, and it's fun to hear.
Yeah, I had to do so much stuff to make those commercials. Like, hey, can you make it sound like a North Korean camp? Yes, child. Yes, I can. You've made an old man very happy. And so I'm out there on the beach with a megaphone, shouting squid related juche ideology at 9 in the morning, and I loved it. So, hot dogs. Last week we started a conversation. It was an email about the modulo math of hot dogs versus hot dog buns, and that got us some. A couple of emails. Victor from the internet writes, I'll have to remember the hot dog bun thing for the next time someone tells me the universe is finely tuned. Becky?
A finely tuned universe, you know, like watchmakers, or, you know, like the human eyeball, or like the example of hot dog buns. Man, if humans who actually manufacture things and design things will make such an error like this, like, you know, hot dogs in packs of 8 or packs of 10 and buns in packs of 8, then what is to that's what's behind intelligent design, and it even is a mess up. Come on, the universe is not finely tuned to any intelligent designer.
Jonathan?
Oh, indeed. Say, for example, you had an economic incentive involved in something like this. Honestly, I think the hot dog, I'm putting on my aluminum foil hat here, the hot dog industry and the bun industry might be working together, because then that way you have extra hot dogs, assuming you don't drop anything on the floor. So then you have to buy more buns, but then you don't have enough buns for the other back and forth, increasing profit margin. Or somebody just made a mistake at some point and it just became common. That's how that works. So that's basically my two cents on that one. But no fine-tuned universe.
No, but the idea of hot dogs, the mismatch between buns and dogs as a method of forced economic interchange, I think is something we aren't looking closely enough. It's like, imagine if shoes came in pairs, but socks came in trios.
Again, it's a least common multiple problem. You know, how many packs of socks and shoes will you need in order to have an equal number, one sock per every shoe? It's the same. It's your beautiful, you know, seventh grade
problem.
Okay,
but the standard distribution of shoe wearers, how many do you need?
Okay, fair.
Yeah, because you don't need like 10 pairs of shoes at once.
I don't know. That's debatable. I mean, you're the guy who wears just one pair of shoes for about 3 years until it completely wears out and then gets another excellent pair of shoes, right?
Okay, fair, yeah.
Many people will have different pairs of shoes for different outfits and different circumstances and activities.
Well, hey, I also have sandals, which I do not wear with socks.
True. You are not a true Pacific Northwesterner. So you wouldn't even need to buy the trio sock packets.
No, I mean, it would be for 2 feet and a sock puppet, because sock puppets are nice.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. Could you make a puppet out of a hot dog?
Yes.
I mean, with the extra hot dog, you could carve it up like an octopus and then have it in your soup.
Yes, and I know exactly how I would do it.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't have the ingredients here. unfortunately.
You would need to add further ingredients to make your hot dog puppet?
Well, yeah. If you're going to make a hot dog puppet, it needs to be articulated in some way. And so you'd need to add something to it in order to articulate it, because it's not like you can shove your hand up a hot dog.
Oh, are you thinking like a marionette type of hot dog?
It would
puppet?
Have to be a marionette style puppet. Yeah, it wouldn't be like you couldn't sock puppet it. Unless you had like a hot dog the size of my forearm. And the less I think about this, I think the happier I am. I'm moving on. The reason for why Jennifer from the internet writes, the reason for why hot dogs come in 10 packs but buns are 8 to a pack is obvious. The other two sausages are for the non-human weenie roast participants. For those unfortunate individuals without furry housemates, may I suggest slicing them up and pan frying them?
I'm assuming she's slicing up and pan frying the hot dogs, the extra hot dogs, not any furry housemates.
How dare you?
I dared. I went there.
Yeah, jeez. I think this is the burnt weenie sandwich of Frank Zappa lore, is what Jennifer is suggesting here. So, yeah. Our cats are cats, so they're kind of particular about what they eat, and they don't seem to care for hot dogs very much.
Oh, but whenever I open up the packages of ground beef that I'm about to brown and season for spaghetti sauce, they are all there.
Yeah. Keeping the cats, okay. A way we are keeping entertained, Becky and I, while we are here together at home, is we're trying to keep the cats entertained, because the cats are a little bit...
They're just really surprised that there is so much attention, and there's a person everywhere they try and go, and...
They're weirded out right now. So I'm weirding them out further by building them devices, by building them entertainment things to see how it works. Most recently, I a couple of years ago, I bought a water pump, for a fish tank water pump. And I'm like, well, I could build something. I could use this in brewing, or I could use this for my laser cutter, or like I got a bunch of uses for these. So I bought it, and it just kind of sat. And then a couple days ago, I was like, well, the cats are acting kind of weird. Mr. Adventure likes drinking from the faucet, so why don't I build him his own faucet? So I take the water pump and some scrap acrylic, and I build my own version of one of those flowing water things that you do for a pet. But this water pump does 50 gallons an hour, or up to like from 50 to like 150, and I turned it all the way down.
It's a pretty steady stream.
It's a hose. It's a hose.
It's not a nice little trickle like you'll see on the rocks fountains at your therapist or something like that.
No. This is UHF, drinking from the fire hose kind of stuff. So the cats aren't so much entertained by it as they are horrified by it. And Becky, you tried to get them to play with it and it didn't work out very well.
Oh, they're just extremely cautious. They're completely hunched low and long to the ground. Their tails are not moving and they're approaching it. I tried putting little kibble in a Hansel and Gretel trail, like all the way up to it so that they would, eat it. And they got within about, 6 inches of it, and then just reached their paw out to bring the other little kibble back because they could not bear the thought of going any closer to this.
Jonathan?
Well, you could always try making the hot dog marionette, which I think is a whole new craft which was just invented.
Would the cats be startled and cautious about the hot dog marionette, or would they try and eat the hot dog marionette? That is a good experiment. We could have, a control with...
Hey, Mr. Adventure, bite me!
If you need any home experiments to run with your fifth grade children who are now schooling at home, we have just given you... Art for the day, 2D or 3D sculpture, and science class. So you're welcome again, parents.
Plus nightmare fuel.
Yeah, I think it's going to turn into one of the first things I do once we finally can leave the house is buy hot dogs and fishing line and straws and build. I don't want to think about it. A vicar in the southwest of England was live streaming to his congregation. Window liquor! That's what I'm thinking of!
What?
Aphex Twin.
You have to clue me in, Sam.
That's the electronic music I was thinking of.
Ah, for doorknob liquor.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I got it now. Okay. A vicar in the southwest of England was live streaming to his congregation from his home last week when he accidentally set himself alight on ceremonial candles. I like, Becky, you set a light here, not on fire. I like how you're getting the mood here. It's pretty good.
Yes, he set himself a light.
Yeah. Stephen Beach of St. Boudou Parish Church had just asked parishioners to wait for the Lord God to reveal what message he had for them when he realized his left shoulder had moved too close to the flame. Beach could be heard exclaiming, "Oh dear, I just caught on fire," and "Oh my word." A subsequent video features the vicar telling his viewers to watch his outtake and noting that his family was really impressed with it. All indications are that the man suffered no physical injury during the event. Jonathan?
Now that is a whole new level of mood lighting. Have a romantic dinner. Just set a priest on fire a little bit. It's fine. It'll set the mood.
It's impressive, apparently.
I
impress your friends.
Yeah, I'm impressed over here. I mean, I honestly, as somebody who's trying to get streaming systems going, from here for like the Daily Briefing and for our online post shows and whatnot, I kind of feel for the guy. I've been there.
Yeah.
I have singed myself on my solder iron a couple times already. I haven't set myself on fire yet, but the quarantine is young. So that may occur.
I just like also that it's let's listen to see what the Lord God is telling us. Oh my word. Oh, I seem to be on fire. Your timing is impeccable, yeah, Father Stephen.
Pretty good timing there.
I want the Lord works in hilarious ways.
Blah, 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 state-run church, blah, blah, blah. I could do that. But man, accidentally setting yourself on fire while trying to do something streaming for the first time. We've done streamathons. I've been there. I can't say I don't feel for the guy. All right. A Pennsylvania pastor has apologized after he and his church faced backlash for holding a large church service last week, despite CDC recommendations that urge people to gather in groups no larger than 10 people. In his March 22nd sermon, Pastor Tom Walters had suggested that calls for social distancing amid the COVID-19 pandemic could be a direct attack against religion disguised as public health measures. Walters also compared coronavirus deaths to those caused by common influenza and automobile wrecks. Walters subsequently used his church's Facebook page to apologize to the for the frustration and concern that in-person services may have caused. He asked for the public not to blame his church for his actions, stating that congregants were just trying to honor him and the Lord. He also stated that church services will be streamed online only until further notice, and that the annual Passion Play has been canceled. Becky?
Well, this really puts into contrast the British vicar, who's just a, you know, guy trying to still communicate with his congregation. Oops. Oh, no. To this guy in Pennsylvania. And, you know, this pastor is not the only one who we've seen that is, you know, thumbing their nose at these orders to no longer gather in large groups. The fact that this guy said, hey, we think that the order to not gather in groups is actually just an attack on the church to say that our religious freedom is being impinged. This really puts that to the test of, no, this is for actual public health measures to try and preserve our hospital capacities around the country. And you've got the gall to say, oh, I think that this is merely an attack on the church. Yeah, you do owe your congregation and your community an apology. And I will say that his whole apology did also say, like, maybe, you know, I'm sorry, but also I was so hurt by all of the vitriol that I got online. I don't know. What do you think, Jonathan?
I think that it's, if some of the information, the bounce away from this was from his own congregation, it kind of gets back to that old adage you guys have been using for a long time, which is that people are better than their books. And I would say congratulations to that particular congregation on fighting back against their pastor, even in the smallest bit. But it seems like there's a common theme of the more fundamentalist or, I guess, extremist style of preachers and pastors and the like fighting against this thing with that conspiracy theorist aluminum tinfoil hat thing. And just the resounding, nah, guy, like, just let's stop, this is serious. It's kind of heartening in a way to see that response where even this devout person can dial it back and accept, I don't know, basic science.
Yeah, I mean, this is the confluence of two things. Is we're seeing it a lot. It's half the news today, which is, you know, a lot of people say that religion, a lot of atheists say that religion kind of got started when people were trying to assign some sort of cause to things that weren't understood, you know, and that's where from whence you get the whole God of the Gaps thing. And then there's this other thing. So you have that where every time something happens that's inexplicable, that is either inexplicable or just a random occurrence or just something that happens. I mean, even in insurance, the insurance world, they call it an act of God. And so you've got people who want attention and people who hold these massive services. They want to cast the events that happen for no particular reason in their religious conflict, in their supposed religious conflict. They're using it as an example about how Christian people are preyed upon in the United States, which is, you know, okay, it's not politically a Christian nation, but man, if you look at the social numbers, it definitely is. And, you know, the majority is using this as an example of why they're being preyed upon. And just the confluence of these things is this is where I begin of an actual public emergency of the kind we haven't seen in a century. And this desire to keep all eyes on me by pointing at the Lord, where honestly, and the intent, he wants the attention toward himself. And so when I look at this, I'm like, even is this apology even a heartfelt apology, or is it just a way to keep people talking about him as we are talking about him now? That's one thought I have. The other side of that is precisely what Jonathan said. It's got to be, it can't be people in the media. It can't be politicians who are telling him, hey, this is a bad idea. Let me show you, because that would just play into his martyr complex, his martyrdom complex. It has to have been someone in his constituency complaining that, no, I work on this stuff and what you're saying is crap. We're really trying to keep people alive, and this guy kind of had to eat his words. And since, you know, Jonathan's using one of our sayings to keep it to point that out, and I do like to think the best of people, I think I'm gonna stick with the latter one there. I think I'm gonna go with that.
I think that's a probable thing also that I hadn't considered when first looking at this, especially since the guy was using Psalms that say, you know, come to me in my house and no plague will ever get you. You know, he's looking to scripture to say, oh, if we all gather in the church, then somehow coronavirus won't get us. Yeah, that's a 2,000-year-old mentality. We're in the year 2020. We know that your you know, microbes don't stop at the church doors, and they travel between people. And we've seen other congregations that have refused to stop worshiping together in person in large groups. We've seen people sickened by this. But I do like that. The people are better than their books. And this is a pastor that has to learn from his flock, I guess.
Jonathan?
It's one of those hand sanitizer is stronger than your God situations, which I'm all 100% behind.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I guess credit where credit is due. At least in the end, made the right call. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Let's go to the break. When we come back, we're going to, I guess, talk about politics and wrap this up or whatnot.
Wait, we're live?
This is a warning made by the team Hot People.
Squid Ink. It is a lie.
For example, the last day.
Hey, kid. Wanna buy some squid ink?
Sure.
They never saw that kid again.
Notice, do not listen to squid ink salesmen.
Ever.
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. Cephalopod is not real.
I know.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. A Pew Research survey found that fewer than half of Americans associate Donald Trump with Christianity when asked, as far as you know, what is Donald Trump's religion? One third of respondents identified Trump as Protestant, 8% thought he was Catholic, and 2% described him as just Christian. Trump nominally identifies as a Presbyterian, but attended a Baptist church last Christmas and seeks counsel from Pentecostal spiritual advisor Paula White. 16% of respondents thought that Trump follows no religion in particular or thought that he was an atheist. 5% classified Trump's religion as something else, and specified a variety of answers, including the assertion that Trump worships himself, money, or power, and that Trump is a fake Christian, that Trump pretends to be religious, and that Trump is evil. Becky, yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay, so we have contended that Trump is no atheist. He is an autotheist.
Well, you contend that. I make no claim.
Fair.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised. As far as I know, what is Trump's religion? I don't know, but I can go off of his actions, and he seems to know not very much scripture or tenets of particular religions. He seems to vacillate between lots of different guiding principles, most of which is what will benefit him. And so I'm kind of with these other folks that say, yeah, something else. He worships himself and power and money and is wholly unconcerned with religion other than what do religious people think of me? I'm with those guys.
All right, Jonathan, what's your take on this?
Oh, I think it's more along the lines of like a solipsist, sophistic, ultra-crepidarian argument that he's trying to, I'm on your side. Like, I would imagine that if you look at the demographics of each one of those different survey blocks, that they basically said that they were, that Trump was whatever they were.
Right.
Trying to, like, identify their hero worship and saying that, oh, he's just like me. But the thing is that he's just like whoever is listening within the audience so that he can win and try to look like the most likable guy within that audience frame. So it's all about the perspective of the audience. He's not trying to win the argument. He's trying to win over you, whoever the you is in this case.
You're really onto something there, Jonathan, because if you look to the published study, and we have it in our show notes at atheist.radio, it's not so much that everyone who thinks that Trump is X, Y, or Z is also X, Y, or Z, but there's a much starker division based on one's political party. So amongst Republicans who are Protestant are most likely to also see Trump as Protestant, but folks who are Democrats and happen to be Protestant will say, no, Trump is a fake Christian, or Trump is nothing in particular, or Trump worships himself. And then similarly to some of the things that we saw last week, with Hispanic Catholics and Black Protestants being really skeptical of Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, Hispanic Catholics and Black Protestants were most likely to like not correctly identify Trump's religion and then also say that he is, you know, not a real Christian and things like that. So it's like, it's to the extent that Trump is able to say, oh, I'm with you. Yes, they would see Trump reflected in their own selves, but all the people that Trump seems to have othered, like Hispanics or Black people, for instance, they're all up on rejecting Trump's religiosity because it just doesn't jive with their experience of him being a moral or good human being.
I'm going to hand this back to Jonathan.
Yeah, it seems like if you look at the different rallies and stuff like that, which is like pulling teeth trying to get through, but by and large it's this pandering to whatever audience there is. So if he's in Indiana, then you know you've got this upswelling of evangelical Christians, and so he'll say evangelical Christian-ish stuff. If he's in front of military people, he'll hug a flag. If he's in front of whatever audience, he tries to adapt to that audience so that you'll look at him in the way that, oh yeah, he's one of us. Look, he did the thing. The thing means he's a part of our flock or group. And in the response for the demographics, it's that classic in-group, out-group mentality where if you're inside of a group, you see internally differences within yourself and you can say, okay, well, these guys are a little bit different, but they're all part of us. But those that are outside of it are more, they have that homogeneity where they're all the same. All Democrats are the same. All Republicans are the same. And it kind of just takes off that and follows through with that kind of logic. And it's disappointing because if we're looking at things from the secular perspective, which the United States is founded on, that it wouldn't matter whether or not he is Presbyterian or Lutheran or whichever group he's trying to pander at the moment. It's about whether or not he's effective. But that the blinders of those different in-groups and out-groups kind of makes it where it's more or less a distraction from the sheer nonsense he said a few minutes ago before he hung the flag.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add to this compared to you guys. I think you have it surrounded. I mean, the only thing that I would say is I don't think is evil, because evil's not a thing. Evil is a supernatural quantity.
Can we say he's horrible and racist and
those are attributes which you can describe, where evil is difficult to describe in anything other than mystical or emotional concepts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other than that, I think he's good at the Gish Gallop. And I think that's what Jonathan was talking about, is he just throws so much stuff at the wall that you don't have enough time to refute it all or rebut it all. And other than that, he reminds me of a cross between an arena rock band in some city. Hello, Columbus! You rock! Are you ready to rock? He's totally into that. And then a little of that crossed with Burt Reynolds as played by Norm Macdonald on the Saturday Night Live Jeopardy skits, where, you know, somebody asks him, so what's your religion? Christian. Corinthians too, whatever. Christian. Yep.
And everyone can nod their head and say, see?
See? Yeah.
See? He's my Christian.
Yeah. Checkbox. And now you can move on. I don't have much to add to that. And
I think what these Pew Research
polls... about the guy, to be honest with you.
I mean, what they reveal is how perceptions can be so influenced by one's experience, and that there's so much emotionality built up into perceptions.
Yeah. Any closing comments on this one, Jonathan?
Just that, I guess it's that perspective and preference thing, you know, where if you have a preference that this is supposed to be a good guy, you've got the R next to your name, and because they've got the R next to their name, then they're obviously a good person. And also that good people are good, God-fearing Christians, and your version of it might be Presbyterian or whatever, then they just kind of attach it to it.
Yeah.
And it's an unfortunate human thing that we all have to deal with, and especially if you get into the debate sectors where, you know, your logical fallacies and all that other good stuff, it's just unfortunate. And it's disappointing whenever I see a research thing come out and you start picking it apart, and usually it's not really about what the news article says it really is. And it's a whole different gamut of things. And I guess just not leaning on these kind of surveys so much is probably in everyone's best interest.
Yeah. So moving on, we'll do one final email. This is John from Idaho, who writes, in response to how our listeners are doing, we're fine. My lovely and talented wife is sewing masks at the moment. I'm starting work on a technician class training course, and social distancing makes classroom training unworkable, so I guess it'll have to be online. John is actually the guy I met at the Hamfest a couple of weeks ago, the guy I ran into at the Hamfest in Puyallup, and he, you know, he's been interested in what we all do. And I have to admit, the Hamfest, I'm usually kind of focused on other things. And I was a little awkward when we ran into each other.
I think that it's a good way. Sounds like a good way to keep busy during this time. So you're looking at continuing to, keep yourself intellectually stimulated, keep yourself connected with a sense of service to the greater community. And I hope that more listeners are in that sort of state as well.
Absolutely. So, Jonathan, thank you for working with us today. I kind of like this thing we've got going, because I'm used to having three people in here, but then I can have the people I've been talking to for years for doing Ask an Atheist on, and we can finally work together, and it's pretty cool. If people want to hear more from you, where would I send them?
Basically, just look up TDTF pod. It's a unique enough set of letters where I'm the only thing that shows up, except for something in Swahili. So just the English one, and you can find me.
And TDTF is Too Deep, Too Fast podcast.
Yes. So, although I've kind of shied away from the Too Deep, Too Fast because it has some implications that I'd rather avoid. but TDTF is simple enough to be able to find.
We're talking intellectually delving into topics and things like that.
From zero to existential dread in 3 seconds.
sounds
not good.
Scary, but very interesting. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thank you for having me.
You can go to our website at atheist.radio. You can Twitter us at AskAnAtheistWA. We are on Facebook. Just search us out. Post shows are happening online. You can see details at our website at AskAnAtheist.radio. Our phone number is 844-753-7842. You can leave us a voicemail whenever you like. Again, our website is atheist.radio. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Becky. See you guys next week. And as Sean from the internet says, wipes and sprayers.